Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kristen Lisenby, and my co-host, Kate Ballou. Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
How's it going, witch? How's the city treating you?
Hello. Good question. Eclipse season. We're here. It's weird. Things are weird. But the city's good. I mean, Brooklyn, I love it here. I saw some daffodils this morning. They're so cheery. Like, you can't, well, at least I can't look at a daffodil and be sad. Like, spring rain, daffodil, morning walk vibe.
I
also just got back from a little ocean trip with my mom, which was really special. I know we talked about ocean rituals for spring equinox last spring equinox. So I was definitely reminded of that conversation. Received a little dolphin magic. I saw so many dolphins in the ocean, including a little baby, a couple during a storm outside of my window. Like, to hear dolphins breathing during a thunderstorm over the ocean, it was just like otherworldly experience. I can't describe it. But so they're so magic. Amazing. I felt like, because we were talking about them for our trickster episode a little bit, like in that piece from the Kim Kranz deck, I just felt like, and from Maya's bestiary, I think she mentions dolphins, and definitely just,
they're listening.
They are. They've got wisdom. But yeah, I'm just back and writing in the midst of the spring crossroads with you. So much fun. I taught in the Coven community for Tamed Wild earlier this week, which was so much fun. I think listeners, if you join that community, there's a replay there, little writing workshop. And Kristen, you're teaching next?
Yes, I'm actually going to be teaching. Yes, of course. I'm going to be teaching at the end of April.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to be mysterious, so you'll have to check back to see what's going on. I don't think they've
announced
it yet.
Scorpio rising queen.
Still a secret. But yeah, so many spring happenings right now. And I just keep thinking about the dolphin magic, and the return of our beloved crossroads. I just love to see it. And, Danielle actually just got me all set up in the Tamed Wild Coven the other day. So I'm really excited to watch your replay this weekend, which is so nice because being in the Azores, my time difference rarely allows for me to catch things live, which is such a bummer. But I'm really grateful for all these recordings and virtual circles that are so inclusive to us far away, isolated folks. But yeah, spring is usually pretty busy here for me, you know, like in the country on our farm. But in years past, I'd probably right now be talking, you know, about my garden and what I'm putting in the ground right now. But the thing is, you know, I recently adopted a feral cat.
Yes.
And she's precious. Her name is Wednesday, but she's the worst gardener I've ever met. And I know cat parents out there are laughing right now because I just did not know until recently how vicious cats are with plants. So right now it's my mission to cat proof my garden, which is not what I had planned when I decided to raise a cat in the greenhouse. But here we are. Spring things, you know.
If anyone has any tips to help Kristen.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Please let me know. Tell me all the secrets. But what listener question did we grab for today?
Yes. So on Instagram, Tanders1121 asked us, do you wear ceremonial clothing or anything special for Sabbats or rituals? And I love this question. For me, easy answer is yes. I would say, though, that I do most of that ritual adornment through jewelry. And it's definitely more maybe every day than ritual, like plus some. But, you know, my engagement ring is really sacred to me for like daily magic because Cody gave it to me. He designed it with our friend Stephanie, who makes incredible custom pieces. So I wear that and just kind of feel that magic. I also have jewelry from my grandma that I treasure. I never got to meet her, so when I wear it, I kind of feel connected to her on my hands. And one of them's a poison ring, which I just love that she had that. and, you know, I think, like, for anyone thinking about adornment through jewelry, like ancestral heirlooms are a really beautiful way to connect with this ancestral line. But if you don't have those, just PSA, that ancestral line can start with you. So picking out a couple heirloom pieces with that intention, I think can be a really, really beautiful practice, to go to grandchildren or nieces or chosen family, can be really ritually powerful. Working with crystals too in this way, there's actually a podcast listener here, Woodsy Muse, helped me craft a black tourmaline piece that I love to wear when I'm teaching or holding circles, because they're just so protective. And then just to like shout out a couple other makers, my friend Donnie at Highlight Rituals crafts gorgeous ceremonial pieces. I also just got this waist chain. I'm wearing it right now. I'm obsessed with it, especially after our class last night about Aphrodite, Kristen. I'm like,
yes.
Spring goddess area waist chains. Here we are, from K Nature. So definitely check their work out. So, so cool. And then as far as clothes go, I do have this one shawl that I'm pretty obsessed with from Sister Nettle. I definitely recommend checking out Sister Nettle's work. So gorgeous. She stamped like yarrow on it and all of these different moons. And I used to always wear it to my apprenticeship with Robin. It's just a special piece. And then if you're looking to pick this for yourself, you know, I've been taught by my teachers to wear white or red when you're holding space ritually for other people, just because they're like less absorbing colors. Black is a bit more of an absorbing color, but so when I'm in a ritual myself, I love actually to wear black dress, a big black hat, whatever just kind of makes me feel witchy and, you know, a little bit of glamour magic, which I know we've talked about before too. I think that clothing and jewelry and makeup can be so, so good for that. What about you, Kristen? Any special pieces or advice for folks looking to work with clothing or jewelry in this way?
You know, I just love everything you said. I feel like I don't have anything to add to it. I'm usually, you know, I'm really simplistic when it comes to what I wear, you know, being on a farm, but I do love wearing black, of course, all the time. Also, you know, wearing my grandmother's jewelry. I have a tiger's eye ring, and a garnet necklace that I love. And I typically wear those every day, sort of like protective pieces. But I think it could be really fun to do an episode in the future on ceremonial clothing, and jewelry. Ooh. Yeah.
What a great idea. Let's do it.
I love that.
Let's do it. Send in your garment folklore, friends. I want to read it. I want to know.
Yeah. Well, for today, you know, we call ourselves winter witches, Kate, but when I was prepping for today's conversation, I looked back on some of the spring-centric episodes we've done, and there are so many. We've talked about fairies and shapeshifters, the hare, the cauldron, the chalice, Artemis and her crescent bow, flower magic, oomancy, seed magic, garden folklore. What am I missing?
Wow, look at us go.
I know. I was amazed and sort of impressed and realized that maybe we are a bit of a spring witch as well. But it got me wondering what archetypes and symbols and stories you might be working with for this new season.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm also impressed with us. The archive mm-hmm. is deep, friends.
It is.
Check it out. Today, when I was thinking about just tidbits or threads of spring that I haven't spoken about yet that I just love, I learned about a new goddess, so I'm here to share my findings. So one we haven't spoken about, which is really fun, if you can believe it. I also talked a little bit about spring gardens, or rather spring so-called weeds through dandelion magic. And then a little bit about eclipse season, because I know that so many people have questions about eclipse season. My girl group chats have just been like popping off. Everyone's like, Kate, what's going on in the sky? And I'm like, let me tell you. So I'm bringing some of those threads in as portals into spring. What about you?
I can't wait to hear. I'm definitely leaning into a few seasonal archetypes right now. The sun, of course, being number one, or just more generally the element of fire. So I'm going to talk a bit about that today, but also the Ouroboros, the famous snake devouring its tail. I want to talk a bit about that and explore those themes today. And Kate, I know we have an entire episode dedicated to fire magic way back in season two, where we discussed what working with this element can look like. So listeners, I'll link that for you if you missed it. But through a mythical or symbolic lens, which is always my favorite place to start, fire speaks to passion and creativity, action, love, and destruction, but then transformation. And while our seasonal cycles don't always align with nature's, these are matters and thoughts and things that often flourish come spring. In tarot, the suit of wands aligns with fire, cards that highlight ambition and determination and doing the thing. Also self-expression and maybe a bit of chaos here and there, but overall, the suit of wands is solar-centric, solar-powered, driven, and charged. Magically speaking, a wand is a tool and an extension of a practitioner's will, piercing veils and boundaries and reaching into worlds just beyond our mortal fingertips. A tool of direction, a long staff was often carried by goddesses and huntresses in folk stories and myth and art. And while we might assume these staffs are weapons or even simple walking sticks, they are indeed wands, quietly marking magical prowess. All sorts of deities have been known to carry staffs or wands or scepters, like Greek Athena, Circe, and sometimes Hestia. Also Hermes, Hephaestus, Asclepius, and Hathor, our Egyptian goddess of love, sensuality, and sky. In the past, alchemists have claimed that fire contains spiritual energy and was the agent of transmutation, since all things derive from and return to fire. This was a belief based on the teachings of Heraclitus, a philosopher from 500 BC who theorized that everything was in flux and nothing remained fixed. He also believed in the unity of opposites and suggested that the world was made of four elements, fire, water, earth, and air, continually transmuted into one another in fixed measures. Summarizing one of Heraclitus' theories, Plato said, quote, Heraclitus says that all things go and nothing stays. He says you could not step twice into the same river. Heraclitus' messages have been called logically incoherent, while others refer to his words as oracular language. I don't know a whole lot about Heraclitus and his philosophies, but in thinking on ancient fragments and oracular language, my mind goes to the Oracle of Delphi and even the poetess Sappho. whose love letters and hymns and message fragments from the ancient world have been described by some as divine and by others as nonsensical dribble. Like the mythical staff, a symbol of fire, our words can be wands, spelling out unseen powers, but only in fragments. And like our words, fire can keep us warm, but it can also burn us. It can enhance and illuminate the journey ahead, but in excess, it can dazzle, blind us, and obscure with its brilliance. From the essay Harnessing the Inferno by Maya Spalter via the Library of Esoterica's Witchcraft book, quote, "The element of fire is of particular interest and utility to witches because fire is so spectacularly transformative. The other elements, water, air, and earth, undoubtedly transform their subjects, but unlike fire, they tend to do so in a more gradually perceptible way over time. Fire is immediate in every instance. Fire is the process that transforms matter's dense units of stored life energy into heat and light. This energetic transformation, as it dances before our eyes and permeates our bodies with invisible warmth, naturally entrances and inspires awe in nearly everyone. But for witches, observing the process of fire confirms physically and visually the suspicion that many mystic traditions and practitioners take as the basis of their faith. That we, as mortal beings, are also just bundles of stored life energy, engaged in a gradual process of dispersal." End quote. And I just love this final thought. Maya suggests here, you and me as bundles of stored light, gradually dispersing energy and attention into whatever kindles our fires. Other words for dispersing are scattering, propagating, and circulating. And according to the garden and all the wild places, spring is a fertile time for these things. Scattering our intentional seeds, propagating our will, and circulating the embers of life, new and old. Astrologically, spring and Aries season marks the start of a new year. So many of us are celebrating coming full circle when the earth begins to grow again. This is a concept, Kate, that we talked about in our conversation with Shelby Bundy from a few weeks back when we considered the layers we shed during winter and what we were calling in for spring. And for me, envisioning this return to self that spring's spark offers us, it elicits images of the circular serpent slash dragon I mentioned earlier, the Ouroboros. Like the element of fire, the substance which this creature breathes, the Ouroboros has ties to alchemy and transmutation, with Carl Jung calling this symbol the basic mandala of alchemy. In J.E. Surlot's A Dictionary of Symbols, it says, "The Ouroboros appears principally among the Gnostics and is depicted as a dragon, snake, or serpent biting its own tail. In the broadest sense, it is symbolic of time and the continuity of life. It sometimes bears the alchemist's phrase from the 2nd century AD, hen to pan, which means the one, the all." The Egyptologist Eberhard Otto said that this symbol was first called tail and mouth and appeared in Egypt around 1360 BCE. It was only later that it was renamed Ouroboros, and the circle of the snake's body came to illustrate the non-existent or outer darkness. This circular, self-devouring being illustrates the end of the cycle, when the many has become the one again, and the transformed primeval god is alone and no longer has any witnesses for his existence. On Eris.org, which is a great website for those interested in finding ancient artwork from museums and archives all over the world, I found an engraving from the 1600s with a dragon, wings at its side with wing-like ears. It's relaxed, reclined on the earth, and devouring its own tail. There are ruins, an archway, and the start of a forest in the background. And beneath the image, there's a riddle, or perhaps a warning. It reads, quote, "An atrocious hunger taught the polyps to gnaw at their own legs and taught man to feed on human flesh. Now the dragon, while it bites itself in its tail and devours it, for the most part itself becomes food for itself. This dragon will have to be conquered by the sword, hunger, and imprisonment, till it devours itself and spits itself out, kills itself, and generates itself again." Some people suggest that the Ouroboros is a symbol of self-sufficiency or wholeness, not only feeding off the substance of self, but devouring it, as all the descriptions say, devouring its body as if its next life depends on it, and according to most, it does. In trying to connect further with this creature who is not just eating its tail, like I said, but devouring it, according to descriptions, I can't help but think of the god Saturn or Cronos, who devoured his children for fear they would overthrow him, and Zeus, who devoured Metis, a goddess who survived his attempt to silence her and instead gave birth to the warrior Athena, while inside of her former lover's stomach. Like the Ouroboros, the element of fire also has the ability to devour, to consume, with a perpetual hunger that is both sacrificial and fruitful. Barbara Walker says that the Ouroboros is the Greek name of the hermetic world serpent, sometimes the sea serpent Oceanus encircling the earth, sometimes the underground python coiled in the earth's womb. It might go by its Phoenician name, Taut, or its Egyptian names of Sata, Tuat, or Thoth. Some see the Roman Mercury, or Greek Hermes, Leviathan, or Ophion, in the self-devouring snake. Like these deities, the Ouroboros is thonic, manifesting and demanifesting according to its will. I mentioned earlier that Jung referred to the Ouroboros as an alchemical mandala, and in this sense, this symbol can represent the circulation of light, perhaps not much different than our seasonal journey around the sun. The Ouroboros as the sun or a ring of fire makes total sense, but I can easily see this creature's reflection in the moon as well. The moon is also round, it devours the day, yet it radiates its own light. Plus, the serpent and dragon are traditionally lunar creatures, often the misunderstood villains from folk stories and myth. Plato goes a bit further when talking about this creature and doesn't describe the Ouroboros as symbolic of the sun or moon, but the entire universe. He says the universe, like the Ouroboros, is a serpent fixed in a cyclical and unchanging path as it consumes its own tail. Joseph Campbell tells us that, despite all the interpretations out there, the message of the Ouroboros is simple, and something that many of us witches have long suspected. Death is inevitable, but life marches on, propagating new flowers from the rot. Life lives on life, he says. This is the sense of the symbol of the Ouroboros. Everything that lives, lives on the death of something else. Your own body will be food for something else. Anyone who denies this, anyone who holds back, is out of order. Death is an act of giving. Listeners, I would love to know how you view this symbol. Do you see the sun, the moon, or the entire universe enacting a ritual of self-devouring? Do you see the Ouroboros as the wheel of the year or a merger of life, death, and time? Can you feel the warmth radiating from within this ringed dragon, or are you more focused on its scales, the armor worn by our most ancient guardians?
Hey, witches, Shelby here. I'm the creatrix of Tamed Wild, and I wanted to jump in here real quick to let you know about a new offering we've put together for you all. Born from the desire for community and a safe place to share and grow in our practices, I bring you The Coven. The Coven is an online community safe from the eyes of social media, where we can gather, share, learn, and connect. We can really be ourselves. Led by the Tame Wild team, each week members receive 6 new offerings, including a live check-in call, a downloadable grimoire page, an audio meditation, astrological insight, collective tarot reading, and journaling and shadow work prompts. Additionally, each month members receive a PDF workbook focused on growing your spiritual practice, a tarot spread for the month, and a 60-minute live gathering where we share in ceremony, ritual, or education. The membership is loaded with offerings, and the space that holds it is incredible. With discussion boards and a live chat feature, there's always someone there to connect with. Membership is $26 a month, and you can try it free for 7 days. Visit tamedwildcoven.com for more information. We're really excited about this offering, and we hope to see you there. Now, back to magic and alchemy.
Spring itself is a portal. The opening between the end of winter honors the decay and death that has passed with the season and celebrates the growth that's to come, only now seeds, but come harvest time and abundance. This is a gate, a threshold, another turn in the year's spiral, the spiral dance, as Starhawk calls it, or perhaps the circle game if you love Joni Mitchell or Buffy St. Marie like I do. The poet Ovid says about April, the fourth month in which thou art honored above all others, and thou knowest, O Venus, that both the poet and the month are thine. There is something extremely Venusian about April. Here on the East Coast, there are rain showers. The earth is soft, luscious even, and the blossoms begin to break ground. Everything unfurls in its own time, even us. The goddess is always a welcome portal for seasonal magic, so today I'd like to introduce you to the goddess Kaiveli. According to Daily Magic by Judica Isles, Kaiveli may be the world's oldest known goddess. A clay statue excavated from what is now known as modern Turkey, estimated to be approximately 8,000 years old, portrays an enthroned woman flanked by leopards and lionesses. Her veneration seems to have spread from Anatolia to the Middle East, perhaps brought by the Hittites, who called her Kubaba, which evolved into the Phrygian Kaiveli and then to the Roman Cybele. The 6 days of April, the 4th through the 10th, are dedicated to Kaiveli, and different aspects of the goddess are featured on the different days. Kaiveli is theoretically everyone's goddess. She is frequently described as God, the mother, but historically her favorites have been women, children, transgender people, midwives, herbalists, diviners, fortune tellers, crystal gazers, and scryers, as well as those who work with or on behalf of big cats, her sacred creatures. Her sacred flower is the rose, and Kaiveli is associated with caves and mountains. Her symbol is a frame drum, an unpretentious spirit who likes when devotees gather together in celebration. Kaiveli likes figs, honey, arak, and Greek or Turkish foods. Make enough so you can dine with the goddess, end quote. I was so curious how this goddess shapeshifted into her Roman successor, Cybele. According to worldhistory.org, the Cybelian cult was originally brought to Rome during the Second Punic War, and at that time, the Carthaginian general Hannibal was wreaking havoc in Italy, posing a serious threat to the city of Rome. The Sibylline books of prophecy consulted by the Roman Senate in emergencies, predicted that an Idaean mother of Pessinus would free Italy, and to many, this meant Cybele. Listeners, a little side note here, those Sibylline books or Sibylline books were a part of the Cumaean Sibyl's work, if you remember the episode where we talked about her oak tree oracles. Just a fun note. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, she started burning these books of prophecy that she made when she was mad, which I just love a little rage. So, but back to the history lesson. A black meteorite representing this goddess was brought to Rome from Asia Minor in 204 BCE. Miraculously, Hannibal and his army left shortly afterward to defend Carthage against the invading Romans. A temple honoring Cybele would be built on Palatine Hill in 191 BCE, and the cult eventually achieved official recognition during the reign of Emperor Claudius. Due to its agricultural nature, her cult had tremendous appeal to the average Roman citizen, more so women than men. She was responsible for every aspect of an individual's life. She was the mistress of wild nature, symbolized by her constant companion, the lion. And not only was she a healer, she both cured and caused disease, but also the goddess of fertility and protectress in times of war. Although, interestingly, not a favorite among soldiers, even offering immortality to her adherents. She is depicted in statues on a chariot pulled by lions or enthroned carrying a bowl and drum, wearing a crown flanked by lions. End quote. Kristen, did you know these stories?
You know, I feel like these stories are so similar. Like, I just keep thinking these descriptions remind me of like the Maenads, you know, wearing these leopard outfits, these leopard capes. I mean, even like the flanked by lions. I'm just thinking of so many other goddesses. Like, I'm making so many connections in my brain right now. But yeah, this is all fascinating.
Yeah, and her connection with the rose, too, like leading back to that kind of Venusian Aphrodite storyline, which then, I mean, it all goes back to the goddess, right?
Absolutely.
I love that so much. And it was, I'm so happy. I mean, Judica Isle's Daily Magic book has just so many cool little tidbits in it. It's just one of those books you can kind of pick up and find these like seasonal magical portals, which I'm so grateful for. Another way to connect with the season is through the natural world that we're all a part of. That's one of my favorite ways to feel the seasons changing. So you can just spend some time sitting by a favorite tree in a park and noticing the shifts in the landscape around you and inside yourself, too. Or if you're like me, you can look out the window as the spring rains fall, just like they're doing right now as we record this. And I know Kristen's in the middle of a storm, too, which is kind of magical. When I think of spring plant magic, you know, I often think of the dandelion. It's just a sure sign that spring has arrived, you know, up from the muck of the earth. And it's what some might call a common weed, and many who are protective of their lawns might rage against or call this being an enemy, but witches know the truth. It is imbued with magic and is a friend and an ally. So in spring, dandelions appear, dotting the yards of many and carpeting our ground with sunny, bright, dispositioned flowers. And you may remember holding a yellow bloom up to your chin or waiting for dandelions to go to seed so you could make a wish. In this way, they feel so deeply connected to that magic of childhood, that nostalgia magic that we often talk about. And this blossom is also linked to the goddess. According to learned religions, in some magical traditions, dandelions are associated with the goddess Aphrodite because of her connection to bees. And in others, this plant is connected to the underworld by way of its association with the goddess Hecate, which I love. I love that root, both underworld and blossoming kind of bridge and connection. And I know, Kristen, you've talked about that link between these two goddesses before.
Yeah.
In our first interview that we did with Green Witch author and herbalist Robin Rose Bennett in episode 28, Robin recounts how Dandelion first spoke to her on her Green Witch path. And I feel like Dandelion might be the first herbal ally for many of us. In her book, Healing Magic, A Green Witch Guidebook to Conscious Living, Robin describes the magic of dandelion, saying that these blossoms can help you connect to the joy of living, guiding you to release emotional pain and bringing light into darkness. Herbalist Christine Buckley in Plant Magic, Herbalism in Real Life says, "Every summer, I collect its sunny flowers and tincture them in vodka or preserve them in honey. When winter arrives and inevitably gets tough, I miss the sun, I miss the contact with people, I retreat inside myself. I look on my herb shelves for my jar of liquid sunshine. I take a half dropper full and am instantly exhilarated. While dandelion leaves and roots relieve chronic stagnation in the liver, dandelion flowers can relieve a stagnant, depressed spirit. I guess now is an appropriate time to confess that dandelion is my favorite plant. I love it for being scrappy, fierce, life-giving, and cheery." End quote. Another viewpoint for this season is through eclipse season. Kristen mentioned the Coven and Community episode earlier, I believe, and we definitely talked about eclipse season there. We also discussed eclipses and retrogrades with astrologer Juliana McCarthy of Ethereal Culture last spring, if you're longing for more astro talk. But eclipse season this year began with the first eclipse, the full moon in Libra, on March 25th, and our second eclipse will be on April 8th. The space in between these eclipses is often called an eclipse portal or an eclipse season, and these seasons are moments or happenings of karmic path changing, surrender, realignment, and departure. The word eclipse comes from the Latin eclipsis and Greek eclipses. An eclipse is an abandonment, literally, a failing or forsaking, from those root words meaning to forsake a usual place. And so, eclipses speak to change. They arrive as omens, prayers, blessings, illumination. According to NASA, the oldest recorded eclipse in human history may have been on November 30th, 3340 BCE. A series of spiral-shaped and circular petroglyphs was found at the Lochcrew megalithic monument in County Meath, Ireland. Petroglyphs are rock carvings made by pecking into stone. Immediately in front of a carving that shows overlapping concentric circles, archaeologists found the charred remains of nearly 50 individuals. Scholars continue to research and discuss the meaning of the petroglyphs. Around 1200 BCE, scribes in Anyang, China, recorded eclipses on oxen shoulder blades and tortoise shells, called oracle bones. In these eclipse records, the scribes said, "The sun has been eaten." End quote. These eclipse happenings are both ancient and modern, felt by humans and the more than human world. I know that spiders stop their weaving and take down their webs during eclipses, which is so magical. And I know that this astrology can sound a little intimidating and change can cause anxiety. It's a reminder that change is the only constant we know and that these changes bring blessings as they unfold. So if you're looking to ritualize spring this year, you might consider an altar or feasting with the goddess or a goddess of spring. If Kaiveli or Sibeli don't speak to you, definitely check out Kristen's Beautiful Spring Goddess article on the Tamed Wild blog, or listen to the newest episode of The Moon in Carolina, where Shelby Bundy speaks about her favorite spring goddess stories. You can work with the spring plants in your area, perhaps calling on dandelion for a bit of magic. There might also be cherry trees or violets, really anything that blooms or sprouts or blossoms where you live. You might consider connecting with your inner fire, working with a wand, the part of your chart that contains Aries. You might also honor this eclipse by journaling, surrendering, and allowing your path to appear under your feet. You might meditate with the symbol of the Ouroboros, reminding yourself that everything is a cycle, and the end and the beginning are always woven together. May your spring be abundant, potent, powerful, and kind, filled with eclipse magic, portals of possibility, and many, many gleaming dandelions.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kristen Lisenby and Kate Ballou. You can find us online at Easton Alchemy and at K8 Baloo. Send us all of your questions and comments, or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram at Tamed Wild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us back here in 2 weeks for another magical conversation. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it. So mote it be, or something better. Until next time.